gold-plated diapers.
Hey, Jellyheads, and welcome to another episode of
Flapdoodle Forum,
the show where we discuss the strange occurrences in society and culture
and provide our insight and feedback for you to enjoy.
Welcome to the show.
We're your hosts, Lucas Wilson
and Matt Buckley,
with our guest host,
Dave Halston.
We've got some stories for you tonight.
Boy, do we.
Guys, you guys on low energy here? What's up? Come on, guys.
I'm excited. I'm ready to go.
Ready to go? Ready to go?
Yeah. I got an awesome story for you guys.
You know, Matt, you've got your thing up right there. How about you go first for a change? I'm always the one in the
put
first
put the pressure
hot
on
seat.
Me, huh?
Yeah, I'm putting the pressure on you.
No, that's all right.
My article's kind of banal, so I think it'd be good if it's in the middle.
Well, that's all right. You know, I'll get mine finished, and then I'll relax, you know,
and
get that out of the
way.
Then
get mine, and then David will hit us off with whatever history lesson he's bringing us today.
I'm really excited. Those are always awesome. Now, I'm kind of afraid that you guys might have already heard about this, because it's hit a few mainstream news outlets, but the title of the story... This version I have on Huffington Post is Dr. Sam Axelrad, former U.S. military physician, returns to Vietnam to give back arm to soldier.
I read that today, today, and I contemplated in getting that article,
oh really?
But then it was
I figured you might have already heard it because I know you read the Huffington Post, I think.
It was on Yahoo.
Okay, it was on a bunch of mainstream news outlets, like I said, but it's a pretty interesting story, so I, you know, chose it.
You get that, Dave?
And that doesn't ring any bells for you?
No, I haven't heard about this.
Right, okay, yeah. Then I have at least one pair of fresh ears for sharing the story to.
Okay.
So I'm going to read verbatim from the article here for a bit. An American doctor arrived in Vietnam carrying an unlikely piece of luggage, the bones of an arm he amputated in 1966. Dr. Sam Axelrad brought the skeletal keepsake home to Texas as a reminder that when a badly injured North Vietnamese soldier was brought to him, he did the right thing and fixed him up. The bones sat in a closet for decades, and when the Houston urologist finally pulled them out 2 years ago, he wondered about their true owner, Nguyen Quang Hung. So basically, as the story goes on, this doctor, for whatever reason, he's compelled to go back to Vietnam to return the arm remains to this Vietnamese soldier that he amputated them off of.
Okay, I have to ask this point. He kept the arm.
It's a little bit of a weird thing. It's kind of unorthodox,
yeah.
But yes.
I read this article today, too.
Was that your reaction?
Me? Yeah, I was thinking, it's like, why did this guy... It's like, I read that part. Kept it in a closet.
Yeah.
Why does he have this guy's arm? And I'm looking, and there's a picture
this
of him.
This guy has skeletons in his closet.
It's a little creepy.
So, there's a picture of him with the guy, you know, now. But then there's also a picture of them together back in Vietnam. And the guy is like, he almost looks like he's like a teenager, like the kid who had his arm taken off. And then there's the doctor. And in that picture, like, you assume that the amputation had happened recently. And the arm is already a skeleton arm.
Yeah, I saw that picture too.
I didn't quite understand. Did he
weird.
Like just throw it in a vat of acid and he's like?
No, I think it says in the article that they boiled the, you know, all the flesh and stuff off of it right after it was amputated.
Boiled.
Is that standard procedure?
I'm not sure. Let me see if I can find it in the article.
Or was he just like, oh dang, this gives him a chance because I got my own arm from some dude I know.
Okay, yeah, I found it. It says, as for the arm, Axelrad said his medical colleagues boiled off the flesh, reconstructed the arm bones, and gave them to him. It was hardly a common practice, but he said it was a reminder of a good deed performed.
So
that
it was
really...
like...
So congratulations, you saved this man's life.
This.
So we're going to give you his arm.
I'll keep that.
Yeah. Then he just flies out to Vietnam and hands this guy his arm.
Like 50 years later?
Yeah, the guy's like, oh, man.
Like one day he's like, you know what? I'm going to give this guy's arm back. He probably wants that back.
There's a fact... I don't know if I'd want to have, and it's just kind of, I mean, like, you know, as a doctor, I guess it's no big thing, but how nonchalant he just holds his arm.
Right.
Like, he just doesn't care. And I like how the guy's just smiling next to him as this guy's, like, just dangling his arm.
Apparently, when the doctor went back to Vietnam, the two really hit it off, and they, like, met each other's families and everything, and they had dinner together.
Yeah, they met each other's families. I mean, he brought his whole, like they said, they met each other's children and grandchildren.
It did say that.
Which means he brought his entire family over to Vietnam.
Yeah, I was wondering about too. So he just rounded up his whole family like, hey, you want to go to Vietnam with me to return this guy's skeletal remain arm? It was a little weird.
Yeah.
But
not too many people get to have their amputated arms.
It's a pretty rare occurrence. Yeah, I saw this headline and it really grabbed out at me, so I decided to investigate it.
Would you, if you were a doctor and you amputated somebody's arm, would you keep it?
No. Would you?
I don't know. I'd feel like almost like that would be almost a really morally gray area. Just
right.
Like, I don't feel right owning this man's arm.
Yeah, it's like
arm.
You're taking it as a trophy or something.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I saw this guy's arm like off and then I kept it.
It was like a war trophy that he was keeping.
Yep.
I mean, like, glad he, you know, what the guy says, like, oh, I'm glad I have my arm back so I can bury it with me when I die.
Yeah, that was like the why the guy was so happy about it, I guess. And also at the end of the article, it says that American veterans returning to Vietnam to return personal items to former enemy soldiers is it's kind of becoming a trend now, I guess.
I mean, that happened with World War II.
Yeah, it's a way to get closure,
like,
I think.
You know, U.S. soldiers bring in crap they took from Japan, Japanese
yeah.
soldiers. Dave.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on doctor returning arm that he severed from a soldier?
Well, it's weird to keep it, but then somehow it turns out I feel it's even weirder to return it.
Like,
especially after the prolonged period of yeah. time there.
Well, the guy always seemed pretty happy to have it back so he can be buried with it when the time comes.
They're both really old, so I guess he decided if he was going to do it, he had to.
I mean, it was just sitting collecting dust in his closet.
I just decided to come back to Vietnam and give you a hand.
Your father never happened to take anything from his war exploits, has he?
Not body part. No, nothing really.
None of the three big ones that he was in?
He was in three wars?
World War II, Korea, and Vietnam.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. No, I mean, he got his uniforms, some, you know, medals here and there, and his...
No body parts, though.
He didn't take, like... I never saw him show up with anything from, like, from the enemy, you know? No, like, parts
Dave.
Of weapons or anything. But except for, like, money. Vietnamese money he had.
He's a crook!
Dave, you might want to check his closet. You know, see if there's anything buried in there.
There's, like, a skull and a shoebox under the bed.
I've gone through all of his stuff,
all of these
you
years.
Know? All of his war stuff.
Have you really? Maybe your mom's hiding something from you, Dave. I know my dad talked about how he and a bunch of guys, like, during the Gulf War, they had collected, like, a bunch of, like, Iraqi weapons. Like, you know, each of them had their own, like, AKs and stuff they had taken from the enemy.
I'm assuming they weren't
but
weapons
then,
of mass destruction.
Yeah, but now there's, like, you know, rules that say you can't take that back with you. So they were all like, oh, darn it.
Well, I did tell you the story, and this is almost a flapdoodle story in and of itself, of my dad was guarding prisoners, you know, war crime prisoners after World War II.
Yeah, the Nuremberg trials.
Yeah, the Nuremberg trials. And, you know, one of the guys was packing up his stuff, and I guess he was going to be executed. And he took a pack of letters, and he handed them to my father and said, do you want these? And there were letters that were written to this guy by Adolf Hitler. Every one of them had Hitler's signature on them.
Wow.
Those might be worth some money.
What did they say?
Nothing, because my dad said, no, I don't want these. And gave them back.
Did you say your dad regrets that? He's like, I could have held on to those and sold them.
Yeah, he later said, he's like, what was I thinking?
Yeah, why did he turn that down?
Well, because, you know, maybe at the time...
Because they
like,
had to do with Hitler. He didn't want anything to do with Hitler.
Yeah. But now it's like, in past, you know, some collectors out there would be like,
oh, man, yeah. Those would be worth a ton.
Which war criminal was it?
I don't remember. I don't think he remembered.
I know you said that he met the lady who made lamps out of skin.
Yeah, ooh. She was called, like, the bitch of Buchenwald or something.
Well, we're getting a little off topic now. Oh, man.
Yeah, he met her.
Yeah. That's like a menacing title.
Yeah, he met her.
Yeah. He didn't bring any lamps home either.
I'm really glad he didn't.
Would you like a lamp? No, thank you.
Next topic. All right. Guess it's my turn, folks. If does it load itself up? It's pretty banal, but I thought it was kind of interesting. It's not wow, but
show me the banality.
It's really cool. I've heard a few of these. All right. Message found in bottle after 97 years underwater. goes on display. A scuba diver looking for treasure in St. Clair River near Detroit stumbled upon a different type of prize at the bottom of the river. A message in a bottle. Dave Lander of the Great Lakes Dive Center told Detroit's WJBK that the note had been buried for 97 years until he found it in the silt.
I happen to be see a piece of paper in there, and I could actually read the writing underwater, Lander told WJBK.
This was last June. Now the bottle is heading for a local museum at Harsons Island, Michigan, where it and the note inside will be on display. So, what was on the note? A simple message from two young women who were in the Toshmu Amusement Park on Harsons. The message read, "Having a great time at Toshmu!" and was written by Stalia Parmstaller and Tilly Esper. This is, the find is, it's hardly the first one that's been discovered. In 2010, for instance, a 10-year-old boy put a bottle with a message into the Pacific Ocean off the coast of Oregon, and a year later, a girl in Hawaii found it washed up on the beach. Also in 2010, a Florida teen named Corey Swearingen, Swearingen, tossed a message in a bottle into the Atlantic Ocean. Fast forward a year and a half, and the teen got a response from a boy and his father in Ireland, where his message had come ashore.
Did they send their own message in a bottle back to him?
I don't think so. I think they just mailed it back.
That would be a ridiculous coincidence.
No, that would be awesome. And then the story of Dorothy and John Henry Peckham in 1979. The couple threw a message in the Pacific while on a cruise. That message was found 6 years later by Vietnamese man Hoa Van Nguyen while he was on a refugee boat off Thailand. Then began writing to each other via regular mail, which is much more efficient. And a friendship blossomed. Eventually, the Peckhams helped to sponsor this guy's family's immigration to the United States.
It's a fascinating story.
I also heard of another one where a guy, I think, dropped, as a little boy, dropped it off the side of a boat or off the shore in, like, Russia. And some people in, like, the U.S., like, a boy in the U.S. found it washed up on a beach, like, 30 years later. So, what do you think about these, you know, these,
Well, for me, it's like, if I find a message in a bottle, washed up on shore, I'm looking for one of two things. Either A, a treasure map, or B, a really just dirty, sexy letter.
Addressed to you, Dave. Wouldn't that be?
One can only hope.
A surprise.
Wouldn't that be really creepy? You find, like, you know, random beach. Washes up on shore, you open it. It says Matt Buckley.
Or the ultimate would be you find the bottle and you open it, you pull out the message, and you're like, all right, let's see what this say here. Blah. Signed Bela Lugosi.
Blah. Signed
Bela Lugosi.
Bela Lugosi.
I think our society kind of has a fascination with messages and bottles.
It seems that a lot of people who do this are young, like kids who like, or these girls in this case.
Well, I think it's kind of anticlimactic that it was just such a simple message. Like what Dave said, if I found a message in a bottle, I would want it to be like a treasure map or like the seven spices in Kentucky Fried Chicken or, you know, something like big.
I mean, like that was the kind of that was like a really boring note for that first, like the article is mainly based on just saying, hey, we're having a great time at this amusement park. Plunk. Why would you? Yep. Why would that be what you're writing on?
It was the 1912 version of a text message, basically.
Yeah, it was. Facebook message post.
It was Facebook status.
So, this begs the question, what would you write on a bottle before dropping it into the ocean?
Oh, man, I think I would, like, try to, like, play up, like, this epic story in this note, just so, like, whoever finds it later on, just, like, what the hell is this? Like, you know, like, oh, hey, like, I'm lost at sea for 3 years, my treasure is buried, and
my coordinates are!
My coordinates are!
Just send them on a wild goose chase.
Yeah.
Also, there's treasure there.
write this whole, like, you know, these journal entries that make it seem like I went through, like, this almost, like, paranormal experience out in the ocean or something.
That freaks some people out. Yeah.
Time to do that, boys.
Let's get on it.
There was actually a story, like a short story about, you know, people found a letter that gave coordinates to buried treasure, and they spent all this money going out there to find it. They got to the coordinates, they found a box, the treasure chest, opened it up and said, "You idiots, you found my message and you followed it here."
Wow.
Fooled you.
That's
hilarious.
Why would they be idiots, though? It's just kind of like...
Because I fell for it.
Here would be a good one to send a message. It would be like, "Tonight you will be visited by three ghosts."
Freak somebody out, yeah.
Yeah.
What?
Or like, "In 7 days you will die." Just really freak someone out for no reason.
"This bottle had contained anthrax. You just inhaled it."
"If you don't throw this bottle back into the ocean, you will suffer a horrible fate."
That's kind of cruel. I like Lucas's, though. Here's one. "Congratulations, you just found a message in a bottle. I hope you feel special."
Oh, man. Ooh, sorry. What was I talking about?
Messages and bottles.
Message and... That song played over and over at the gym. Like,
message
over the winter.
"Message in a bottle."
I think that's an annoying song.
Yeah, it is.
For a while, I couldn't figure out what he was saying in some of the lines. I was just like, what are you...
But it sticks in your head.
Yeah. That's probably why it became popular.
"Message in a bottle."
Come on, everybody.
You know what else it could be, it would be a good thing?
What?
Just bills.
Bills?
Yeah.
Like currency or money?
You owe us. Yeah. Bill collection notices.
Anyone who finds that would be getting rid of it pretty quick.
Just put the cork
whoever,
back in there.
Whoever opens
out
this bottle hereby accepts the debt here on this piece of paper.
Yes, that's it. I was having trouble thinking of how to put that, but yeah, that's exactly it.
What was this? On nation states? I remember there's a couple mottos I liked. One of the nations I saw, its motto was, "By reading this message, you agree to the terms not here."
Oh, yeah. I've seen that.
All right, David.
Yeah.
Next topic.
Reaching back into the annals of history.
Yes. Well, got another war story here.
Whoa!
How appropriate.
All the way back to World War I.
There's not enough stuff about World War I.
It's often overlooked.
There needs to be some movies and video games that take place in World War
I. Yeah. It's
like a
it's
shooter
kind of
or like a RTS?
You know what, the problem World War I has? No Hitler.
Yeah, there's no super bad. Like, everybody was kind of on the same playing field, like, morally, really.
Yeah.
I mean, Turkey commit genocide
Super evil. You
the
know?
Armenian genocide?
Yeah.
I think so. It was around that time.
Yeah. Well, World War I really was, like, a waste of everybody's time and money.
We're just going to kill each other for a while.
It was the dumbest war.
Yeah.
I remember is All Quiet on the Western Front.
Still, still some interesting stuff about it. I like learning about it.
This is not just a war story, but also a tale of the supernatural.
Oh, I love those.
Ooh, you've, along the lines of, geek. What is it, Gath? Or Gaff?
What?
The mongoose in the wall?
Oh, the mongoose. Geff. G-E-F?
Geff. I keep wanting to say Geth, but that's...
from Mass Effect?
A villain in Mass Effect, and then I want to say Gath, but then that's the other nation in Kings. So I don't... All right, go on, Dave.
Well, this story is called The Angels of Mons.
Angels of Mars?
Mons. M-O-N.
Oh, Mons. Like a mountain?
Yeah, it's a place in Europe where a battle took place.
Okay.
Let's see. I'm just going to start reading from my article on 14 Times. You ever use this site?
14 Times? I don't think so.
No, it's not 14. It's 4TN.
4TM. No, I've never heard of this.
And no, FORTEAN Times.
For some reason, that rings a bell.
Maybe we came across it during one of our crypto nights, Matt.
They have a weird news website.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah, it's an all like weird news website.
Well,
so,
share the news, man.
This was articles written in 2003 by Dave Clark.
Oh, Clark. I thought you said Cluck. I was like, that's an unfortunate name.
Mr. Cluck.
Okay, go on.
See, during the Great War, thousands came to believe that a miracle had taken place during the British Army's first desperate clash with the advancing Germans at Mons in Belgium. In some versions, a vision of St. George and phantom bowmen halted the Kaiser's troops, while others claimed angels had thrown a protective curtain around the British, saving them from disaster. The Battle of Mons took place on the 23rd of August, 1914, and within weeks, the angels of Mons had entered the realm of legend. By the end of the war, it became unpatriotic and even treasonable to doubt the claims were based on fact. Now, how does that strike you?
Wait, so did this group of British soldiers not suffer a single casualty or something?
No, I don't know about that, and I'm betting they did, but no, it was like a battle where it's like at first they seemed like they were losing it, but then they gained ground and ended up beating back the Germans. That's okay. As much as I know about the actual event.
The Germans saw like a ghost of King George?
No, that's what's claimed.
And
or
like,
Saint George.
So Saint George, backed by a bunch of bowmen.
Yeah, phantom bowmen.
Not just with any bowmen.
Get it right, Lucas.
Phantom bowmen.
Now, where did this story start from? Interestingly enough, there was a gothic fiction writer by the name of Arthur Machen, he'd been writing for a while, but he was currently working at the Evening News magazine in Britain. And when he heard of the, you know, it was like the first big success for the British in World War One, apparently, or one of the big first successes. Mm-hmm. He was inspired by that event to write a short story, fictional short story called The Bowmen, in which Phantom Bowmen and St. George show up to help the British troops fight back the German soldiers. But he published this in the Evening News, and it was not exactly cited as in the newspaper as being fiction.
This might have been on crack.
You think so? I don't remember it.
I think I might have read an article, because it sounds really familiar.
I've told you about this once before.
Oh, you did? Oh, maybe. Yeah. Maybe you should write for crack.com, Dave.
When I first heard of it, you know, I told you about it.
Oh, okay. Maybe it's you. Okay. So this has been refuted.
Yes.
Okay.
It has been refuted, but people came forth claiming they were witnesses, you know? And
how long did it take for it to get refuted?
And they kept asking the author, Arthur Machen, to list his sources. And he's like, I don't have sources. I made it up. And then they get mad at him because they believed it.
Just bullshit, man. No, you didn't make that up. Take it back. Take it back.
Right. And even as recently as 2001, people have come forth claiming that they have evidence that this happened.
I want to see this evidence.
There was apparently in 2001, it was like a film reel of the battle. But that turned out to be a complete hoax that was just some guy trying to promote his own thing.
So it's been proven that it's fabricated, but people are still persisting that it's real.
Right, somewhere. Not as many as back then, though, of course. But it entered into, you know, the sort of legend mythology, and it's been brought up in novels and music. I mean, it's mentioned in, like, Agatha Christie book. It's mentioned in most recently in the Cloud Atlas novel.
Really? Was it in the movie, too?
I don't know. I haven't seen the movie yet.
Neither have I. I was just wondering, Dave. Maybe you did some research.
I like this one. At the start of the film, Ed Wood is shown producing a play based on the legend.
Oh, yeah? So, how did this guy's story get published in the news section of the newspaper?
It wasn't in the news section. It was in a, you know, they would publish fictional stories in the paper.
Okay.
But for some reason, he just wrote it at the same time as the news was breaking, you know? It's like he quickly wrote this story and put it in the paper, like the week the event happened. Because he was writing for the newspaper as a journalist.
Okay.
So people believed in it.
It just got caught up in all the stories about this battle that they had won. It just got mixed into the blender, you know?
Huh. I mean, the guy should have published it in other things.
I mean, he was a prolific writer. He wrote a bunch of stuff. That's not even what he's most known for. And he was actually also an influence of a big influence on both H.P. Lovecraft and Stephen King.
Oh, yeah? Wait, yeah, hold on a second. Hold on a second. He was a big influence on H.P. Lovecraft?
Yes.
Wasn't H.P. Lovecraft from, like, the 1800s?
H.P. Lovecraft was in the 20s, 30s.
Oh, that's when he wrote? I thought he was
It was earlier than that, too.
1920s, 1930s. No, it was...
When did he die?
36.
Well, he wrote pretty late in his life, then.
Actually, he died young.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I think that people should have been able to tell the difference with this, because the type of writing for news and the type of writing for fiction is very different. So was this written in like a short story form? Like people should have been able to grasp that
it was... written as like a first-hand account. This is almost like a War of the Worlds situation.
Okay.
Where he was like, he wrote the short story as a first-hand account, as if somebody were writing a journal.
So he wrote as if he was a guy writing it, or like as if he was interviewing someone?
As if he was the guy who said, I was there and I saw this happen, you know?
I was there and I saw it happen.
Grandpa Lucas?
Oh. You're damn Skippy, man. I saw it happen. I was in that war.
Isn't it past your bedtime?
I don't have a bedtime. I never sleep. It's all thanks to that battle, too. Ain't that right, David?
Sure it is, Grandpa Lucas.
All right, I'm off to go take a nap.
Okay.
I thought you didn't sleep.
Don't bother him.
All right.
Just Lucas, let him do his thing. Regained consciousness?
What? Oh, he didn't punch me that time. He just grabbed the mic away from me.
Ah, he's getting a little gentler, I see.
He gave you that mean look, you know?
I don't know. I woke up outside, the window open. I think he pushed me out.
All right, so I, this is like one of those things that makes me think about all kinds of stories that are of the supernatural that are supposed to be true, you know? Everything from aliens to Bigfoot and all that.
To
Bigfoot aliens, yep. All those that there might be somebody who tells a story or there might be an old story, and then it's like, imagine being one of the trolls who comes forth and say, yeah, I was there, I saw it, when it didn't happen, you know? But that helps spreads the rumor.
It's the power of suggestion.
Yep. You gotta imagine this is how a lot of, like, urban legends and modern mysteries got started.
Could we start an urban legend, guys?
We totally should.
Well, you know what they say, if you're gonna lie big. that's the way for it to get most people to believe it. The bigger the lie, the more layers it has.
The harder it is to refute.
The harder it is to disprove it, yeah.
Makes sense to me.
All right, we'll get on it.
It was actually, to bring it right back around, was one of like Hitler's tactics. Lie big.
I don't want to be like Hitler, though.
Like how in North Korea, they say that Kim Jong-il invented pizza.
You see a lot of things, man. It's just so ridiculous.
Yeah, it's just like that. But, what I thought was funny, this Arthur Machen, Stephen King cites himself as a big fan of his work.
Are you a big fan of his work, Dave?
Not really.
Have you read any of his work, Dave?
I've not actually read it, but I've heard reviews, breakdown reviews of several of his stories.
But Dave, you're a fan of both King and Lovecraft. How can you not want to read this?
You should
guy?
Be all over this.
Well, it's part of another podcast I listened to where they discussed every one of Lovecraft's stories, and then when they ran out of Lovecraft stories, they were like, okay, what inspired Lovecraft? And who were his contemporaries, and they're going through others, and they went over some of this guy's stories. So I The one story I know of his pretty well, just from listening to that podcast, is the great god Pan. And that's probably his most famous thing.
Cool.
Cool, 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 in the school. Breaking out the liver, yo.
And that's actually the podcast, which is the HP
Yoga and
School. Lovecraft Literary Podcast, is where I heard about this story.
Oh.
Or HPPodcraft.com.
HP Podcraft?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always like that.
It's got a nice ring to it.
Anyways, that's all I got. You guys got anything else you want to say on my topic?
That was interesting stuff.
That's some interesting stuff.
Any messages you'll be putting in bottles tonight?
Well, I think I might write out this entire urban legend, cram it into a bottle.
About a severed arm?
About a severed arm, yeah. How I lost my arm. And a man, 20 years after their it happening, found it in a field and found my a bracelet with my address on it and brought it back to me and telling the story in a bottle.
You know, one last thought I had is you could write just complete gibberish on a mess on a note. Like
I'll have
one
all
of
these
Gustavo's
on mine
story
it's
time
like some advanced
bits.
Code, and they'll try to crack it, but it won't mean anything.
Yeah. Just writing this, like, advanced. Yeah. Just, like, random.
Looks like a complex cipher or something.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, I think that brings us down to the end of Flapdoodle Forum. Thanks, David, for being a guest on the show.
No problem.
A frequent guest now.
We've been your hosts, Lucas Wilson.
And Matt Buckley.
We hope you enjoyed. If you liked this episode and you want to listen to more, hop to our website at cyclejethefish.com to find this and other podcasts. If you're a fan and you want to help spread the madness, please give us a like at facebook.com/psychojellyfish or follow us on Twitter at Jellycast. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes and the podcast app Stitcher. Please rate and review. It really helps out our show. And you got any thoughts, words, comments, questions, or perhaps a weird news story you'd like to share, send our way at email@psychojellyfish.com.
Whoop whoop.
Been a fun one, folks.
Good night, gentle listeners.
Keep it psycho.
All right, this is a problem because I can't, like, hear anything.
Ah! How about that?